We stand here right now during the Aseret Meitshuva, and one of the things that's on everyone's mind as Yom Kippur is literally around the corner, and a lot of people are thinking about tshuva, how to do tshuva, what's considered tshuva, how we approach fixing the wrongs of yesterday as we move forward into a new year, particularly coming off a very tumultuous year. A lot of people are taking a little bit of the aspect of cheshbon or nefesh and tshuva this year a lot more seriously than in previous years. There's been a lot more discussion in the general tzibur regarding tshuva this year, how we relate to it coming off a year where a lot of people like to say, how do we know our tefillah? How is your tefillah on Rosh Hashanah? And I've heard from numerous Talmidei Chachamim, but they always respond, ask me next year. And I know I had a conversation with someone about this the other night, and the answer was, you know, I guess last year wasn't as good as we all hoped for, and now we kind of stand before Yom Kippur, right now in the Aseret Meitshuva, and that is something that's on a lot of our minds. So the question I want to discuss a little bit tonight is, let's assume, at least for myself, I'll be honest, I've sinned over the past year. So I'm sure some of you have slipped up here or there as well. And the question is, how do we go about rectifying our sins? What are ways, what is the path that we should take when it comes to overcoming the obstacles, when it comes to going through and working through the challenges that we have, that we've faced over the course of the year? So I want to open up a little bit with the Rambam's from the Moreh, how he understands tshuva in general, and then we're going to see a very, very fascinating, interesting debate between the Rambam and some others in regards to how we actually face doing tshuva, how should we actually approach the process of tshuva, and what it is that we need to do in order to get over the hump and set ourselves up for a tshuva gemura, as the Rambam writes. So the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, in Chelek Gimel Perek Lamed Hey, he opens off and he basically says that we take all of the mitzvot in the Torah, the Taryag mitzvot that the Medrash tells us the Taryag mitzvot, and he breaks them up into 14 general categories. Each mitzvah falls under one of these 14 categories, and then over the next few parakim, he elaborates what falls into which category and why. And the Rambam basically writes that in the first category, HaKlal Rishon Kolelet Mitzvot Asher Hem HaDeot Shereshiot. The first category includes all those fundamental root aspects of our belief. Everything that is the basics, the basic tenets of Judaism falls under the first category. And he writes, U'min HaKlal Zeh Ora Tshuva and Yesodei HaTorah and Hilchos Deos. He says within the world of Klal Aleph, when we discuss what are things that are fundamental basic tenets of Judaism, tshuva's up there as one of them. Not only that, we know the Medrash in Bereishit Rabbah tells us that there were six things that were created before the creation of the world, right? Bereishit bara Elokim, shishah dvarim kadmu lebriat haolam. There were six things that, right, before the creation of the world, there were six things that were created first. So they literally predated creation. And Rabbi Ava Berebi Zera writes, af ha-tshuva, and he brings a pasuk from Tehillim and says, tshuva is one of the six things that literally predated the creation of the world. So we clearly see, if tshuva is one of the big six that's going to be in the world before the world is created, that's a pretty good indicator that it's a basic tenet of our existence on a philosophical, theological, and practical level to live in this world. Tshuva is a basic need and a basic idea that we live with. So the Rambam explains in the following paragraph, where he starts to elaborate about the different groups of mitzvot, and he says, why is tshuva considered a basic tenet? That's kind of the question. If I were to ask you, where does tshuva fall under? I don't know, my original thought wouldn't be that tshuva is really it's one of the fundamental aspects of the world. And the Rambam explains very simply. He says, we all mess up in life. Everyone slips up, everyone sins, everyone has a little bit of a mishap here or there. And realistically speaking, the Rambam says, if you knew the minute you slipped up that there was nothing you could do to affect that, there was nothing you could do to change your fate, right? The minute you messed up, you said Lashon Hara once, you by accident, you mixed your meat pot with your dairy spoon, you're automatically going to Gehenna. It's over. You have no way of doing tshuva. There's nothing that could be fixed. There's no way around it, let alone things that are significantly, maybe more chamor than a little bit of Lashon Hara or a little bit of Basar V'Chalav. So the Rambam says it's clear that tshuva is a key component of this world, because without tshuva, how could we exist? We would literally eat ourselves up from the inside, every little thing we do, and we couldn't continue. If it weren't for man's sins, and if man knew he could never sin and he could never repent and right his wrongs, how could he continue? He writes that the translation was that he would spend his entire life fixated on mishaps and mistakes, becoming more and more bitter and upset by the minute. If man were convinced that he could never make his crooked ways straight, he would forever continue in his errors and maybe even increase his disobedience, for he believes that there is no alternative. If I understand that because I messed up, because I did something wrong, there would be nothing I could do to as tshuva, I literally couldn't exist. I wouldn't be able to get out of bed tomorrow. Right? As we're going to discuss, Be'ezrat Hashem, and Friday Shir tomorrow, the question that Rav Asher Weiss was dealing with, let's discuss it more tomorrow, of someone who is almost positive that he killed someone because of corona. You killed someone by accident in a car accident. And now you're living with that guilt for the rest of your life. There's nothing you could do to change your fate. You're literally going to carry that forever. There's nothing you could do to shift. You could never have a positive outtake. You could never learn how to deal with that. There's nothing that could change. Then how could you ever continue? The entire world would stop for you and it would basically crumble around you. The Rambam takes it a step further in the end of Perek Mem Vav in Chelek Gemo, where he basically is discussing Avodas HaKorbanos. How do Korbanos work? And the Rambam discusses, and this is really the Yesod for those that have for Professor Milgram's Parish in Sefer Vayikra, that we understand the effect of the Korbanot. When we want to know how do Korbanot work, the higher the level of sin, the higher the kapara that's necessary for that which I do with the Korban. And that's why the Rambam explains there's differences between that things that require, sins that require a Korban, that is a lamb, things that require a cow, things that require a sheep or a dove or flower offerings. Where do I sprinkle the blood? Do I sprinkle it on the Mizbeach? Do I sprinkle it on the Heichal? Do I sprinkle it on the Parochet itself? And there's different, we see that the further in we go, the bigger the animal is the korban kulo nisraf, you burn it all, part of it goes to the Kohen, can you eat any of it? All of these questions that are seemingly so mundane mirror and shadow the sin that they're coming to be mechaper for. And as a result, the Rambam says, when it comes to Yom Kippur, how do we know that Yom Kippur is so great? Because when we talk about Yom Kippur, and we'll discuss this Be'ezrat Hashem during Mishmar, we have the Seir Mishtalech, we have the Seir Azazel, the scapegoat, if we want to use the term, that we take and we send off the cliff, we throw it backwards, and it's completely burned. It's not burned, sorry. It's basically thrown and crushed, and it's going to die wherever it is. And the Rambam says, this is proof that the sins are being atoned for in the most, in the deepest clean possible way. You know, it's the ultra max super clean or whatever, because it doesn't even get burnt. It doesn't even get buried. We take it so far out of Yerushalayim to the Midbar. We take it to Makom Gazor, to Azazel, and we throw it off a cliff and leave it there and say, okay, it's so far removed from us, it's not even within us. We don't want anything to do with it. And that's what the Rambam basically says, that our tshuva on Yom Kippur is so, it's so good, it's so intense, that it's basically, it's completely removed from not even, it's even removed from outside of the Mikdash. And with that, I want to discuss a very interesting question. We see from here that with the Rambam, that tshuva is something that pre-existed the world. It's something that is fundamental to our lives. And now that we have the knowledge that we can repent, what's the best way to go about it? How does one actually acquire true tshuva? And the question that becomes is, after I've slipped up, once I've messed up, how do I go about reaching proper and full atonement? What do I do that takes that next step where I now say, oh, I'm good? Or I've reached a point where I can now move on both with myself and with God, or with Ben Adam Lechavero, with my neighbor, with my friend, with my parent, with my sibling. How do I then go on? How do I then continue? So that's the question we want to discuss tonight. As a little bit of akdama, we're going to see tonight a very interesting debate between the Kli Yakar, the Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, and with a little bit of some twist with the Baal Shem Tov and some others. And to open off, the Kli Yakar in Sefer Dvarim tells us that we generally assume the mitzvah of Hakel, based on Pshat in the Torah, is all about Talmud Torah. Once, you know, at the Sukkot, after Shemitah, we all come together in Yerushalayim, the men, the women, the children, and we all come together for this massive Torah reading where the king reads Sefer Dvarim, and everyone's there. And the Kli Yakar points out, he says, it's not all about Talmud Torah as we might have thought. Rather, the Kli Yakar goes so far and says, Hakel is a Mamad Tshuva. It's an aspect where we're all coming together in order to do Tshuva. And he said, it's very odd. We just had Rosh Hashanah. We just had Yom Kippur. We had the Aseret Yimei Tshuva. Why now do we come together on the beginning of Sukkot to do Tshuva as a community? And the Kli Yakar points out that the reason is because from Rosh Hashanah through the Aseret Yimei Tshuva and Yom Kippur, we go through our Tshuva process. We're atoning for ourselves and we're working to reach a sense of spiritual purity with ourselves and our friends and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then right after Yom Kippur, we're so busy preparing for Sukkot, we don't have an opportunity to ever sin. Right? The 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot are so busy. Let's build a Sukkot. We have to buy Dalet Minim. We have to cook. We have to prepare. There's so much to do that you don't ever have any social interaction. I guess this year maybe we don't have social interaction all year, so it doesn't really matter. But part of the discussion is, what's the purpose of Hakel? And so the Kli Yakar says it's the first Ma'amad Tshuva for the entire community. Because we know all throughout the year, Tshuva can be done as a tzibur when I have a minyan, when we have 10 people together, we can come and do Tshuva as a community. But during the Aseret Yimei Tshuva, we have a unique opportunity to do Tshuva as a yachid. As a person, I can reach the same status, I can attain the level of atonement that during the rest of the year is saved and put aside for a minyan, for a community. So he says, now that Yom Kippur's passed, we finished the Aseret Yimei Tshuva, we come together, Hakel, we're being mechazik one another, that even after Yom Kippur, we should still be doing Tshuva. And that's going to be a yisod where we see the Kli Yakar has a really, you know, he sees how we get into the world of Tshuva very, very interestingly. And the Gemara in Yoma asks a very, very interesting question. On Pevav Amdeh. Hechi dami bal Tshuva. If we were to ask, What does it take to be a Baal Tshuva? What would you instinctively respond? What would your first instinct be? What does it take to be a Baal Tshuva? What do you think? Yeah. Doing Tshuva. Okay, I guess that counts. Anyone else have what's the process for doing Tshuva? What should it look like? Yeah. Go for it. Okay. Anyone else? Yeah. Okay. So Brooke's saying the category of reaching tshuva is when I'm challenged again, how do I react? Whereas Nagal, you're saying that the aspect of tshuva is I have to go through the motions a little bit of admitting my sin, acknowledging it, maybe going to the person, asking for them tshuva, doing a proper vidui, and really becoming whole with myself on an internal scale, whereas in Brooke is saying maybe on an external scale, how would I hold up to the test the next time around? Yeah.
In practice, well, hopefully we get into that situation in the first place.
Perfect.
Like, I was just thinking of that. Like, you shouldn't put yourself in the exact same situation just to test yourself.
Awesome. So what Brooke's talking about now is going to be the debate that we're going to see now. The Gemara answers, what is tshuva? The Gemara tells us, Amar of Yehuda, Kigon, Shebata Lidei Devar Avera Pam Rishona, Vishniya Nitzel Himena. Right? You stumbled, you messed up once, and now that exact same situation occurs again, and you overcome it. You're saved magically from this situation. Then the Gemara continues and says, Machui Rav Yehuda, Beoto Isha, Beoto Perek, Beoto Makom. Right? What's the case? You sinned once with a specific woman, in a specific place, in a specific situation, and now it comes back, and you happen to be with the same girl, in the same bar, at the same place, and the question is, how do you react now? You messed up with that guy last time, and now you see that guy again, in the exact same situation, how are you going to react now that it's the second time around? That's what the Gemara says, just like Brooke was saying. The litmus test for tshuva seems to be from this Gemara, how do I react when I am put in this situation a second time over? That is our discussion. Because Rashi explains this Gemara, why do I need to put myself in this? Why should the real litmus test be when I'm in the same situation a second time over? Rashi says, because your Yetzer Hara, basically when you sin the first time, your Yetzer Hara has more or less it's worn down on you in a certain way in that specific sin with that woman in that bar. And now when you see her again in the same place, your Yetzirah is like, no, you were there. You enjoyed it last time. You know, it's not such a big deal to do it again. So part of what you're doing is not just tshuva for yourself. It's not between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you and yourself and you and other people. It's a personal, internal struggle between you and your Yetzirah. How do I relate to it? The Kli Yakar at the beginning of Parsha Chukat discusses, we all know Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is the paradigm, this is the paradox that we all discuss. How does the Parah Aduma work? It makes no sense at face value. Why should it be that the Parah Aduma is Metaher the Tameh, and it's Metameh the Tahor? Right? Parah Aduma, the ashes of the red heifer, are that which are going to purify someone once they are Tameh mate, they are impure from a dead body. But the Kohen, who takes the Parah Aduma outside of the camp, and burns the ashes to create the Afar Parah Aduma, he himself becomes Tameh. It doesn't make sense that there's this paradox that the pure become impure and the impure become pure from the exact same thing. And the Kli Yakar quotes from the Baal HaAkedah, who says, the Parah Aduma is a mirror of the tshuva process. And the Kli Yakar takes it a step further. He explains why is that so. Because just like the Parah Aduma affects different people differently, so too tshuva is going to be inherently different for person A and person B. And he says, he quotes then, that back in the day, many people, I don't know, is something not as commonly practiced today. He says, right, historically, one of the ways people did tshuva was they would be makabel on themselves fast. You would fast for, if you open up any, like, you know, some of the Rishonim about tshuva, or Sifrei Kabbalah and Chassidus about tshuva, oh, you did X, so you should fast for 40 days and nights straight. Oh, you did X, so you should fast Monday, Thursday, every week for the next 12 months. You know, there's all these crazy cycles of fasting as tshuva for the acts you did. And the Kli Yakar says, for some people, fasting could be a great form of tshuva. For other people, fasting could be really detrimental. Right? There's people who halachically are told, don't fast on Yom Kippur, because it's pikuach nefesh for you. So too for tshuva, you're not going to do certain fasts. Some of these cycles of fasting, it's, you know, it changes based on the person. So the Kli Yakar then takes it two steps further. And he says, the Gemara in Brachos Lamed Dalet tells us, Lamed Dalet Amud Bet tells us, B'makom she'ebal tshuva omeid, ein tzadik gamor, tzadikim gamorim ein yachum la'amod bo. There's a place where the Baal Tshuva stands that even the greatest tzaddik, the biggest Talmid Chacham in the world, couldn't stand in the same place. And the Kli Yakar takes a wild spin on this. He says, why is that? I would think a tzaddik gamor should be allowed to go wherever he wants. He has, you know, he has the master key. He's a tzaddik gamor. He's reached the highest level of Talmid Chacham and Chassid and all the midos that we work on. The tzaddik should be allowed anywhere. Why is the Baal Tshuva better than him? And it's not that he's better than him, but the Kli Yakar says the reason why that is because there's a place where you once messed up that the Baal Tshuva needs to go back to that place in order to atone for his sin. He literally needs to walk back to that place. And if the tzaddik gamor were to go to the place where the Baal Tshuva messed up, he would go flying off the cliff. Right? If let's say you have someone who messed up in a really sketchy bar with a really sketchy guy, and you send all of a sudden, you know, the chief rabbi to go to that place, he's going to be really, like, for him it'll be so detrimental, because it's literally like jumping into ice water. It's going from 0 to 100. It's such a big shift, he can't withstand it. Whereas in the Baal Tshuva, he's familiar with this scenario and he needs to go back in order to overcome. He literally needs to go back and face the exact same scenario that he slipped up in last time in order to move forward. And as a result, the Kli Yakar says you should go back to the bar. You walk up to the DJ and say, hey, can you play the song that was playing last time? You walk up to the girl from last time and you say, hey, do you remember me? And the girl says, of course I remember you. And then you look her in the eye and you say, I'm a better person. I've done tshuva. And you walk right out of the bar. You literally spit in her face and say, you're still in the bar. I'm walking out. Yeah, I guess for COVID reasons, don't spit in her face, but I guess you're wearing a mask. You basically just spat in your own face. But whatever. So the Kli Yakar basically is saying that the way to overcome is literally to walk back into the bar, meet the girl again, have the exact same music playing and then say, I'm not that person anymore. That's shot in the Gemara. It's when you're back in the situation. And the Kliyakar is saying, in order to do proper tshuva, you need to recreate the situation literally, even if it might, you know, at face value, I think all of us would agree that sounds like a really irresponsible plan. Yeah, I don't know, it sounds a little bit like really crazy, like, oh yeah, you messed up there last time, so go back again, and you know, second time's the charm. Like, that really sounds, it sounds crazy, and it's pretty radical. And the Kliyakar then follows us up, and what he writes in Bereishit, and he says, the reason for this is, we know the Makom HaMizbeach is created from the place where Adam HaRishon was created, and we know that the Mizbeach itself also has to be filled with dirt. The middle of the Mizbeach needs to be full of dirt. And as a result, the Kliyakar says, why is that? Because we come to bring our Korban Chatat to do tshuva via our Korbanos on the Mizbeach, and the Kliyakar explains, because it's full of dirt. Why is it full of dirt? Because the dirt represents the place where we were standing. So when we bring our Korban Chatat, the Mizbeach is full of dirt because it's representative that we have to literally stand on the dirt that we were in last time in order to reach that next step. The Baal Shem Tov takes this idea of the Kliyakar, and he really says part of what we're needing to do is you need to go back to that place, literally to be in the same place again, in order to rise up. In order to overcome, you need to go back to the depths you reached last time and get there. And then he quotes the Sefer HaRakia. And he said, the Sefer HaRakia asks a great question. I don't get it. We said you need to go back to the bar. You need to play the same music. You need to walk up to the girl and tell her to her face, look her in the eyes and say, sorry, not this time. And then you walk out. But the Sefer HaRakia says, I don't understand, how could that make sense? You walked into the bar with a mindset of, I'm literally going to show her up. I'm walking in and telling her no. So clearly, you're not in the same place. So the Sefer HaRakia takes this idea of the Kliyakar, the Sefer HaRakia, I believe, actually predated the Kliyakar, but whatever, and he says, you don't just go up to her face, you don't go back to the same place, you recreate the environment. You walk over to her, you buy her a drink, you have a few drinks yourself, you say a joke or two, you don't only go back to the place, but you literally recreate the same environment. And after you're a little bit, you know, intoxicated, you've had a few drinks, you know, you're pretty loose, you're having a nice time, then you catch yourself and say, oh, never mind, sorry, this is not what we're supposed to be doing. And the Sefer HaRakia takes this idea of the Kliyakar and the Baal Shem Tov and literally just, you know, he ups the ante like tenfold. If we thought the Kliyakar was really radical, the Sefer HaRakia goes even further. Rav Yaakov Yosef Me'ushtra, otherwise known as Rav Yaibi, who is a Talmud, a Hasidic master, a Talmud of the Magid of Medrash, he quotes the Sefer HaRakia, and he says, we don't really recreate the Avira, we don't recreate the environment and the atmosphere to do the sin again, but he accepts the idea of the Kliyakar, and Rav Yaibi, or however you pronounce it, he basically says, you're supposed to have, if we're going to steal a term from Rav Shlomo, you're supposed to have a little bit of holy chutzpah. You walk up to her, and you know, you tease her a little bit. Oh yeah, I'm here, remember me, we met last Thursday night. Well, you know, do you remember? I know it was late, we had a few drinks, but you know, I'm back. And then you say, no, just kidding, I'm a new person, I've done tshuva. And you have to kind of, you get there, and once you have that holy chutzpah, and you look her fearlessly in the eye, that's how you walk out stronger than before. You have to recreate the situation, and then you can then you can overcome it. Only once you faced it head on can you really reach a full tshuva. And that's the opinion of the Kliyakar, the Baal Shem Tov, and Rav Yaibi, with Sefer HaRakia taking it a step further. The only way to do tshuva is literally to recreate the scenario where you sinned in order to then overcome it. That's our first opinion. Till now, are we clear? Any questions till now on this first interesting opinion?
Wouldn't it make more sense if the whole idea is that the environment doesn't matter? It's like getting yourself into a headspace where it's the same.
Awesome. We'll see that. We'll see that. Definitely that's one of the opinions that we're going to discuss. Awesome. So that's one extreme. Now we're going to see the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam quotes this Gemara that we discussed in Yuma in the very beginning of the second parak of Hilchot Tshuva. But the Rambam, interestingly, adds in one word. Right? The Gemara told us, if we read, the Gemara said in Yuma, Heichi dami bal tshuva. The Rambam, though, adds in a critical word. Ezohi tshuva gemura. The Rambam adds in the word gemura. What is a complete and total tshuva? And then the Rambam goes on, Zeh shebal yado davar shavar bo ve'efshar biyado lasoto ve'pirish v'lo asam efnei atshuva. Right, someone who messed up once and then the same scenario happened upon him a second time and you overcame it. And it seems for the Rambam twofold. Right, then he continues and discusses our case of the guy and the girl and all that happens there. And the Rambam seems to say that it's two. There's two nekudot in the Rambam that really stand out. The first one is, there's a difference between tshuva and tshuva gemura. For the Rambam, it seems to be, as was suggested, that maybe the basic aspect of tshuva is, you've changed yourself. You're in a different place. Your headspace is different. You're emotionally different. You've done tshuva, as was mentioned before, you've done your vidui, and you've done your kaparas avonos, and you gave tzedakah, and you fasted, and you recognized your sin, and you've done a proper cheshbon and nefesh, and you've moved on. But tshuva gemura, this special exalted level of tshuva, that is reserved for someone who literally goes back to the same place. And note, the Rambam doesn't say, like the Kliyakar, that you're supposed to instigate the scenario. You're supposed to reinitiate and try and, excuse me, you're not supposed to go back to the same place. The Rambam says, one second, shebal yado davar. Right? It came upon you. It's not that you went back to the bar. It's not that you went back to that place. It's that, all of a sudden, that girl from the bar ended up in your shul, and she walked over to you after Kiddush, Shabbos morning, and she comes over to you and says, oh, hey, remember? And you're like, whoa, no. So it's not that you've initiated, you've gone out of your way, but it happens to come back upon you. And for the Rambam, it seems to be that tshuva could be attained, even if you never see this girl again in your life. But in tshuva gemura, this higher level of tshuva is only when you, not only do you see her, but it seems that you don't initiate, but it happens on its own. And then, but if you happen to survive the challenge a second time, you overcame it, that would be a full tshuva. But you could still do normal tshuva without this. And this ties into what we saw with the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim at the beginning, because tshuva, if you could never do tshuva, you would literally never be able to continue living your life. You would lose all of your passion, you would lose all of your hope, you would lose your reason to live, because what good is it to live if I know that I'm in a rut, I'm stuck in a ditch, and I can never climb my way out of it because of A, B, C, and D. So it has to be that you could do tshuva. And if you were to tell someone, chas v'shalom, you tell someone who's a recovering drug addict or a former alcoholic that the only way for you to get over your heroin addiction is to literally hold some heroin in your hand, stare it in the face, give it a little bit of a smell, you know, but hold the bottle of vodka in your hand for the alcoholic and look at it, open the lid, take a nice smell, waft some of the aromas. That's the only way you could get over it. Any mental health professional would tell you it's better to not put yourself in that situation. Why would you tempt yourself with such a crazy idea? So the Rambam coming back into what he said originally in Mor Nevuchim is, if you knew that you could never, you would never be able to overcome your challenge, then you would lose all reason to live. So too, it seems very clear from the Rambam here that tshuva could be attained no matter what. There's a special madriga for someone who happens upon a situation, right? The guy who was struggling with a severe alcohol problem, and then he goes to his neighbor's son's bar mitzvah. And he thought there'll be grape juice, and all of a sudden they have a whole sushi bar and a regular bar and a carving station, and it's a whole bar mitzvah party. And then he didn't know there was going to be alcohol. He happened to go. He didn't go there because he was trying to overcome it. It was simply happenstance, and that is something that he overcame. Rav Yaibi also quoted the opinion of the Rivash, and the Rivash also holds like this Rambam that tshuva is only it's. Happy, you can acquire and attain a status of tshuva no matter what, but it's only when you happen to be back in the same spot that there's this exalted level of tshuva, but you should never try to come and engage in the Yetzer Hara head on. The Rivash says, why would you? We don't play with fire. Playing with fire is dangerous. You're more likely to get burnt than not, unless you know what you're doing. And so the Rivash is saying, just like the Rambam, we don't engage this situation. We don't play with fire. We don't want to put ourselves back there. And now we get to the third opinion, and that's that of the Shari Tshuva. The Shari Tshuva was written by Rabbeinu Yonah in the 1200s as a little bit of just historical introduction to Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva, as we are, really this is a series of shiurim on the Mor Nevuchim. Rabbeinu Yonah, why did he write Shari Tshuva? Does anyone know? I mean, this is there's like academics who argue, and maybe this is not actually true, but the generally, at least, said opinion as to why Rabbeinu Yonah wrote Shari Tshuva. Why is that? Does anyone know? Maybe, I'm not familiar with that. But they say the reason why Rabbeinu Yonah wrote Shari Tshuva is that in the year 1233, after the Mor Nevuchim was printed, Rabbeinu Yonah was one of the main Rebbeim who held that Mor Nevuchim was Kfira, it's not Torah, it's just the philosophies of Aristotle and Plato in a Purim costume called Torah from the Rambam. And the Rabbeinu Yonah was one of the people who signed off on burning the Mor Nevuchim. And as a result, then, 9 years later, in 1242, what happened in 1242, famously, too, in Jewish literature? Yeah. That was when they came and they burnt 20, 40 wagon loads full of Svarim, mainly Shas, in front of the Notre Dame, which... So, they say that Rabbeinu Yonah, when he saw them burning Shas 9 years later, in the same place, in the same square where they burnt the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, that Rabbeinu Yonah said, this is a Mida Keneged Mida. Because we burnt the Rambam, who was the Gadol Hador's philosophical work, his Mor Nevuchim, the Goyim came and they burnt our Shas. They burnt everything we had. And we have to realize, for them to learn lose Shas back then, It was. We can't imagine how much that is. We're in a base medrash full of Sfarim. But you realize every one of those shases, you know, this is 250 years before Gutenberg's printing press. This every single sefer that was there was handwritten. When we discuss how many Rishonim wrote on all of Shas, one of the main reasons that Rishonim only wrote on certain Masechtot was not because they weren't. He only learned Psachim. Rabbeinu David only learned Psachim. He never, you know, he was an Amma Aretz when it came to Brachos, but Psachim was his Masechtot, so he wrote a sefer on it. No, it has nothing to do with that. It's that, realistically speaking, most of the Rishonim didn't own a set of Shas. They didn't have access to the text. It was something that they were so expensive. The manuscripts were so hard and expensive to come by that, realistically speaking, they just couldn't actually access them. So Shari Tshuva by Rabbeinu Yonah, they say he wrote it as a personal tshuva for when he realized that they burnt Shas because he burnt the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, and this was a personal tshuva by writing this sefer. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes, and he disagrees with the previous two opinions, and he agreed with one of the opinions that was thrown out before, I don't remember by who. The Shari Tshuva Rabbeinu Yonah says, what does it mean? Hechi dami bal tshuva, oto ha'isha ba'oto ha'makom. What does it mean it's the same girl in the same place? It's the same treif restaurant as last time. You're with the same group of chevra that you guys all come together and you say lashon hara together about the rest of the other chevra. You're with your group, your whatever it is. Everyone has their own scenarios that maybe we should try and avoid. And the Shari Tshuva says, what's pshat in the Gemara that tshuva is when you're with the same person, you're in the same scenario, you're in the same situation, and you've overcome it? Rabbeinu Yonah says, it's not that you literally go back to the same place. That's irresponsible. That's totally, totally insane. Rabbeinu Yonah says the reason why you need, it's quote unquote, ba'oto makom, ba'oto isha, is because tshuva is that you've shifted yourself, you've changed, you've gone through a personal, internal process where you've done your hakara sachet, and you've done your vidui, and you've done your personal tshuva, tefillah, tztaka, Tanis, etc. You've gone through what you need to, and you now are a different person. And Lu Yitzura, if it happened to be that you would happen upon the same situation another time, then you definitely wouldn't fall. As in, the Shari Tshuva is saying, it's not like the Kliyakar, Chas V'Shalom, that you should re-engage in the same situation to overcome it. And not like the Rambam, that Tshuva's without it, but Tshuva Gemura is when you face it. He says, you should never face it. We do not hand prior alcoholics bottles of beer or wine or vodka. We don't do it. We don't play with fire. But what is tshuva? Shari Tshuva explains that tshuva is when you've gone through all of your AA meetings and you're now 6 months not having a single drink and you're so far removed from it, you're a different person, that even if someone were to come over to you and say, hey, do you want a drink? You'd say, no, I'm not interested. You've shifted your mindset. Your mentality is so different. You're a totally different person on the inside that even if you were faced with it, you would overcome it. And so Rabbeinu Yonah says that's what tshuva is. It's not that literally you face the same situation. It's that had you faced the same situation, it's clear that you are a different person on the inside and you would never have to say yes because the struggle is not there anymore. You've shifted internally so that it doesn't even challenge you anymore. If we were to think a little bit about Rav Dessler, the former Mashkiach in Panovich and Gateshead, the author of Michtav Meliyahu, when he discusses Bechira Chofshi, not our discussion for now, but when we discuss the role of free will in Jewish thought, Rav Dessler has a fascinating concept that he calls Nikudata Bechira. It's the point of free will. And what Rav Dessler explains, what's the point of free will? Rav Dessler explains that the way free will works is it's inherently different for every single person. Sarah's free will is different than Rivka's free will, which is different than Leah's, which is uniquely different than Rachel's. We're all different people. We all have our own challenges. We all have our own struggles. We all have our own background, right? You grew up in community A. He grew up in community B. She grew up in community C. Your family situations are different. Everything about you is different. So how can I assume that you are like him? How can I assume that Shimon's like Levi? They're totally different people. So Rav Dessler explains that free will is something that changes per person. It's a sliding scale. What makes it so unique, Rav Dessler says, is that for your, not only is it a sliding scale for your personality, but your sense of free will changes by the minute, by the hour, and by the day. Because every mitzvah you do, your metaphysical, your spiritual sense shifts up and down. And there's certain things that for person A are a real challenge, but for person B, it doesn't even bother them. And that's why Rav Dessler says that every single person has a different sense of free will because they have different levels of challenge. Someone who grew up in a completely non-kosher home might still have a taiva, they might still have a yetzer hara to eat a cheeseburger because they grew up with that for the first 15, 16, 17 years of their life. And now that they've stopped eating cheeseburgers, it's difficult for them because they remember the smells, they remember the tastes. Whereas if you have someone who grew up to religious their whole life, they grew up in Bnei Brak, they don't even know what a cheeseburger is. For them, it's not a challenge. Cheeseburger is not a challenge. For someone who grew up in a specific community, the challenge for them is, do I take 12 minutes to eat lunch or do I take a 45-minute break? Because every minute for them is Bittul Torah. But for some people, that's not even a discussion because if they get up in the if they say Shacharis before Chatzot Hayom, that's a Chiddush. The fact they might say Shacharis before noon is a groundbreaking concept to them. Everyone's inherently different, so everyone's struggles are different. Everyone's challenges are different because we're all different people. We're all in different places. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains that the whole purpose of this idea is not, well, you have to recreate it. It's that, who are you now? Where are you currently standing? You've shifted. Tshuva is a process of internal growth. It's a process where I want to now take the next step forward in my Avodas Hashem, in my relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a process where I want to go forward one step at a time. And then I reach a point where it's not a challenge for me anymore. I don't struggle anymore because it's easy. Because I've gotten to a point where it doesn't bother me anymore. The same person who was struggling so much not to have the 13th, 14th, or 15th shot until he blacked out on the floor of the bar, now 6, 8 months later, is able to say, I only drink grape juice at Kiddush. Won't even have that little bit of wine at Kiddush Shabbos morning. Because for him, he's reached a point where he's worked on it and gotten to a point that it's changed. And it's not that he faced the situation head on, but it's that he faced himself head on. And when you approach yourself and you ask yourself in honesty, in a real question, hey, I'm struggling with this. This is difficult for me. I want to move forward. That's how you end up taking the next step. The question that this all leads is a very interesting one. I don't understand. if we were to have had this as a roundtable discussion before we started, by raise of hand, how many people would have thought to suggest what the Kli Yakar suggests, or even more so what the Sefer HaRakia suggests? Is there anyone in this room who would have actively advocated that the alcoholic sit in front of the open beer and stare at it in a room by himself for 2 hours? Is there anyone who would have been like, that's a good idea in overcoming personal struggles? Okay, as I expected, no one. What about like a Rambam approach? Really, you don't need to, but if you deal with the struggle, that's like A+. You got a golden star on your chart. You've done tshuva. But when you face the actual situation again and you overcome it, that's a bonus. Who here would have thought that? Okay, about a third of the room. And who would have taken like a Shari Tshuva approach of, no, realistically speaking, it's all about your personal growth. Don't run into the challenge. That's irresponsible. Work on who you are and then move forward. Who would have thought like Rabbeinu Yonah? Okay, math doesn't add up, but whatever. So, this is part of our discussion.
We'll save the other pieces.
It seems very interesting, this whole discussion. Because the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Li'olam al yavi adam atzmo lideni sayon. A person should never actively bring himself to face challenges. We don't walk into the lion's den. The Gemara then actually, this is not going into it now, the Gemara then brings a Kal Vachomer. Shehare, David HaMelech, David Melech Yisrael, hevi atmo lidei nisayon, v'nichshal. How could you be so brazen? You have the chutzpah to say, I'm going to face my challenges head on. I'm going to face my Yetzer Hara face first. And I'm going to win. What do you mean? Don't we see that David HaMelech says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no, we have Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I want to be one of the Avos. I don't want to be just one of the Ushpizin. I want to be one of the Avos. That's like a special darga. Ushpizin's like once a year. There's like 7 days and 7 people. They visit us in the sukkah. You know, maybe you're not allowed to have guests in your sukkah, so the Ushpizin's canceled. I don't know. But David's like, I want to be the real deal. I want to be an Avo. I want to be one of the forefathers. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll send you a test. Avram had 10 tests. You could deal with one, right? And the Gemara here says that he failed. We're not getting into the whole debate because the Gemara elsewhere says that Kola Omer Shadavid Chait, anyone who says that David Chait, you know, whatever, not going into the whole discussion of, you know, how do we deal with the stira between the Gemara that says here explicitly, Vin Nechshal, he failed, and there that clearly David didn't sin. But the Gemara tells us explicitly, don't engage in challenges. There are certain challenges that we don't play with. We don't play with fire. Not only that, every single morning we say in Birkat HaShachar, after we finish the brachot, right? We say at the very end of the long bracha, right after the main Birkat HaTorah, we also say, Shaloi levo lidei nisayon v'lo lidei aveira, okay? V'lo li kashel, etc. We say, every single morning we daven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't send challenges my way. I don't want to slip up. Save me. Don't challenge me. So, we have a Gemara that says it's usher to engage in challenges. We literally daven every single morning not to have challenges. So it seems very, even crazier than we thought before to assume like the Kli Yakar, to assume like the Baal Shem Tov, to assume like the Sefer HaRakia, or even maybe to assume like the Rambam. And it's on this note that Rav Tzadok HaKohen Milublin, one of the great Hasidic masters, writes in Takana Rashavin in his Sefer on Tshuva. Rav Tzadok generally, it's very interesting, when we talk about like Jewish philosophers, Rav Tzadok has really, really radical opinions. He's one of those like out there thinkers. He's like not super mainstream on a lot of really cool discussions. So I would have thought, if you were to like have told me, this is our three-way machloket, Kli Yakar, Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, where's Rav Tzadok fall? My initial guess, honestly, would have been Rav Tzadok's pasha to Kli Yakar Yid. He's going to say, like, you got to face it head on, deal with it, fight it, and you're going to be awesome. But that's not the case. Rav Tzadok assumes like Rabbeinu Yonah. Tshuva Gemura is a personal standpoint, and it's about getting to an emotional point where it's not a challenge anymore. And even if you were to be offered the sin, you wouldn't do it. But then he goes off on He doesn't say it by name, but he goes off on the Kli Yakar. He says, I saw there's certain rabbis who say we should walk into the, we should challenge our sins, we should engage the Nisayon, we should deal with the, we should embrace the battle. And he says, that's crazy. How could you put yourself in a place of Nisayon? He says, to do that, you would have to have such analysis, you'd have to be so smart, so ahead of the game, you'd have to go through such a process, you'd be so irresponsible to actually take that challenge. Who in their right mind, when they struggle with something, would engage in the exact vice that they struggle with? And this is not only brought down by Rav Tzadok, but the Sefer HaChassidim, Rav Yehuda HaChassid, also pretty radical thinker, and the Tzlach, the Rebbe Yehuda, also said, you cannot put yourself in a situation where you're going to then have to try and overcome the challenge that you originally did. This doesn't make sense. And he says that specifically, right, the Kli Yakar's whole approach was, just like Parah Aduma, Tshuva affects everyone differently. So the Kli Yakar said, the Baal Tshuva has to re-engage his Nisayon, and if the Tzaddik were to go there, he would be burnt, just like we saw regarding Tshuva. Just like we saw regarding the Parah Aduma, sorry. But, and that's why the Gemara tells us that b'malkam shabali tshuva omdim tzadikim gemorim enim yecholim la'amod bo. But Rav Tzadok says it's the exact opposite. If there's anyone in the world who should avoid a specific place, who would that guy be? The guy who suffered there before. Who's the last person you should send to Las Vegas to go to the casinos? I mean, probably all of us. But, realistically speaking, we all would say someone who struggles with a gambling addiction, someone who's literally gambled their home, their business, their car, their entire fortune, they literally put a lien on their entire life in the casino, you would never tell that guy, oh, you want to play a game of blackjack? You would the last guy you would send to a bar is the alcoholic. Better to send the Tzadik Gamor than the alcoholic. And that's what Rav Tzadok says, the Gemara is the exact opposite. Because it's a Kavah Homer. For sure the Baal Tshuva shouldn't stand there. The Tzaddik also shouldn't be there. How can he put himself in a place where he might fail? It's interesting to note, on like a historical side, to be a little bit academic and historical for a second. Well, we mentioned before that generally Rav Tzadok is like really radical in his thoughts. Why now here is he like seemingly really like pretty mainstream, very tapered down? Rav Aryeh Hendler, in the former Sekan Rosh Yeshiva in Shalvim, now the Rosh Yeshiva in Ramleh, he wrote an article analyzing the opinion of Rav Tzadok. He's a master specifically in the world of Hasidus, specifically the Sfat Emet, but also in other Hasidic works as well. And he writes, the reason why Rav Tzadok was so ardently against this opinion was because he was dealing with a post-Shabtai Tzvi world. One of the things, for those of you that learned in Jewish history over the course of high school, one of the things that Shabtai Tzvi was such a fan of was this concept called Avera Lishma. Sometimes we need a sin, but it's a sin L'shem Shemayim. Right? I mean, it's not really a sin because I'm doing it for God. So the discussions that are often thrown about this is like the Robin Hood discussion. It's not stealing, it's really tzedakah. I'm reallocating funds to those who need it more. That's called an Avera Lishma. You're a ganav. You literally just stole money from guy A. So I don't care that you stole the money to give tzedakah. You stole. That's called an Avera Lishma. This is part of the discussion by the Hasidim Rishonim. Maybe it's better that I shouldn't daven before Zman Kriya Shema, because I'll have better kavana if I wait till after I eat breakfast, I wait till after my morning run, a shower, a nice cup of coffee. I'll daven at 10:30 when I'm wide awake. But Zman Kriya Shema passed. That was part of the discussion that we see in how do we relate to these different things. So Rav Tzadok was coming so against this because he was battling in a Avera Lishma world. He was battling a Shabtai Tzvi mindset that would gripped Klal Yisrael across the board. Not only that, Shabtai Tzvi also had ideas where he basically said, oh, it's Mashiach, certain halachot don't exist anymore. They say, I don't know if it's true or not, that he held this regarding Shreifot and he would eat Shreif in the public square. They say this regarding a riot, that he would sleep with women in the public square saying, I'm the Mashiach, Mashiach's come, these halachot don't matter anymore, so it's all good. So I don't know if that's actually true or not. But what Rav Hendler points out here is we're dealing with a post-Shabtai Tzvi world where he needs to fight this idea of Avera Lishma. We don't engage in Avera and say, ah, it's for God. I didn't go to the bar to get drunk. I went to the bar to stick up that girl, to show her that, you know, I'm stronger than my Yetzirah. And with that, we're going to try and just summarize quickly, and then we're going to finish off with a fascinating idea by Rav Huttner in Pachad Yitzchak. We saw, opened off with the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam basically tells us that Tshuva really falls under the category of basic mitzvot, because without Tshuva, we could never live with ourselves. We wouldn't be able to survive the rest of our lives knowing that we couldn't ever do Tshuva. When it comes to after we've sinned, how do we go and do Tshuva? So the Kli Yakar and the Baal Shem Tov say, you walk into the same scenario, you recreate the scenario, and then you look her in the face and you say, sorry, not this time. The Sefer HaRakia takes it a step further and says, you don't only go back to the place, but you recreate the same atmosphere. You make, you know, you make the same jokes, you make the same, maybe not such appropriate comments, you have a few l'chaims, and then you say, once you're a little bit inebriated, you then say, oh, this is not for me, and you walk out. We saw the opinion of the Rambam and the Rivash that stam tshuva is when you go through the motions, you've gotten tshuva, and then tshuva gemura is this exalted, you know, bonus round if you happen to see be in the same scenario again, but you never should engage in it. And then the last opinion is Rabbeinu Yonah, where he says tshuva is all about who you are. You need to shift who you are. You need to then become a different person. Had nothing to do with going back to that same place. And Rav Tzadok, the Noda B'Yehuda, and the Sefer Chassidim, and the Tzlach, they all say, and it's clear like Rabbeinu Yonah, anyone who holds like the Kli Yakar is absolutely crazy. And that's that. Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, the former Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin in New York, has many letters. Svarim over there, the blue svarim in the corner, on this bookshelf right there. So he has a set called Igros, all of his letters. And there's two specific letters that I want to discuss tonight. One's Kuf Chav Chet, one's Kuf Mem Aleph, both really dealing with, it's a famous idea of Rav Huttner's. And he's discussing, both are dealing with alumni. He always told alumni, please reach out to me with any questions. He was very open to the alumni from the yeshiva to discuss their personal lives with him. And Rav Huttner is dealing with, in both cases, he has students, alumni, who write to him and say, I'm dealing with a certain struggle. And Rav Huttner basically says that challenges, we often relate to challenges as something that chop at our ankles, right? Challenges are an axe hacking away at our feet until we fall. And Rav Huttner says that might be true, but while a challenge tries to knock us down, the minute you overcome the challenge, you're twice as strong. And Rav Huttner says, I understand that right now it's difficult. I understand that there's something that you're struggling with. I recognize that. I'm with you. I'm here to hold your hand and to discuss this with you as you should work through and come up with a strategy to go through it. But know that once you go through it, you're going to be twice as strong. And he says that in life, we're often forced to overcome the challenges that we deal with. But he says, someone who's great, someone who really strives for greatness, they plan in advance. And then they can get through the challenges twice as easily. Chazal tell us, Chacham Einav Berosho, someone who's smart is someone with eyes in their head. What does that mean? Someone who looks forward, that's someone who's smart, right? If you check the weather and you say, oh, it's going to rain today, so what do? You take a raincoat. As opposed to, you go out, you never check the weather, all of a sudden it's raining, you didn't bring a raincoat, you're out all day, wherever you are, you come back, you have hypothermia because you were irresponsible. Chacham Einav Berosho. Sometimes the smartest, wisest things is just to plan in advance, a little bit of preparation, and you could work your way through. And so Rav Huttner says, right now you're dealing with a challenge. It would be crazy to walk into that challenge without a battle plan. What should you do? Right now you're struggling with A. So sit down and say, hey, you talk to yourself and say, I have a Yetzer Hara for A, B, or C. I have a difficulty with drinking. So what do? I avoid the bars, and I avoid Kiddush Club. And if I'm going out to eat somewhere, I tell them in advance, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I just wanted to let you know in advance, please make sure that there's grape juice at the meal because I want to have something for Kiddush, and I have a personal struggle. Sometimes planning in advance is the easiest way to overcome it, and that's the simplest way to overcome it. And by doing that, you walk out three times stronger than before. And he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows in advance whether or not we're going to pass the test. The test is not for a Kadosh Baruch Hu to know the truth about you. Rav Huttner compares it to a teacher with his students. A teacher, more often than not, does not need to give a test to see which students are going to get an A, B, or a C. If you were to go up to any of your teachers from high school before they gave out a test and say, I want you to write in your grade book, before you hand out the test, who's going to get an A, who's going to get a B, who's going to get a C, who's going to get a D, and who's going to fail the test. With 80 to 90% accuracy, a teacher will be able to tell you 100% before the test is handed out how someone's going to do, based on how serious they are about studying, how much they pay attention in class, are they talking, are they texting, are they running around, are they eating, are they ignoring. You know, everyone knows what the teachers aren't stupid. They know what's going on. They don't need the test. But the test is an assessment so the student could internalize how they are actually doing. The test is more often than not, it's more beneficial for the student than for the teacher, because the teacher knows. And it helps the student assess, how much did I understand? How well did I understand? And it's in order to gauge where we ourselves stand. And the goal of the test is that we should recognize the potential and abilities that we have. Tests are not there to drag us down, but it's a tool for us to raise ourselves up. And that's what Rav Huttner says, I understand that you're going through a struggle. I understand that it's difficult. And he says, he writes this in English, if I recall, there's like a random English sentence in the middle of the Sefer. He writes, I wrote here, Ba'anglit, he writes, Ba'anglit Omrim, in English they say, lose a battle and win the war. Bevadai shehenchach nechshal ve'omed lihiyot nechshal. Right, sometimes you lose one battle in the scope of a longer war. But you need to sometimes trip a little bit here so that you can stand back up stronger. You can learn from your mistakes. You can recognize and assess who you really are. And with that, we walk out with different approaches on how we face our challenges, how we overcome challenges, how do we relate to things in our life that are difficult, how do we relate, how do we understand, and we should be zocha that when challenges come up, we have to recognize that it requires work, it requires energy, it's not always easy. And sometimes the best thing to do, as Rav Huttner says, is to plan in advance, chachamein avirosho, and recognize that yes, we all slip up, as the Rambam says, but tshuva is a door that's always open for each and every one of us. It existed before the world itself existed. It's something, it's a tool for us to take advantage of, to maximize. And we should be zocha that we should have the strength moving forward to not only face our fears, but to overcome them, to walk through them strongly, safely, as we ourselves have changed internally and become a different person, and raise ourselves up in our avodas Hashem. We should be zocha to an incredible, incredible new year, and a gemar chativa tova.